Water, Wisconsin, and the Mercury Cycle, a production of the University of Wisconsin Water Resources Institute, with funding provided by the United States Geological Survey. At this point in our series on Water, Wisconsin, and the Mercury Cycle, it seems perhaps best to step back a little and look at the bigger picture. Why is this important, and why now? Why this emphasis on water issues? To answer this, we offer this thought-provoking essay by Kurt Meine on the ethical considerations of caring for water. Dr. Meine is widely respected throughout the world for his work on major issues of conservation and environmental ethics. He is perhaps best known as Aldo Leopold's biographer, publishing the book Aldo Leopold, His Life and Work in 1988. However, Meine is also well known and admired in conservation circles for his nuanced interpretations of the significance of Leopold's legacy in the 21st century. Dr. Meine is currently the Director for Conservation Biology and History at the Center for Humans and Nature, where he is responsible for developing programs involving a wide range of topics, including conservation biology, land conservation, ecological restoration, community-based conservation, environmental history, and environmental ethics. He is also Senior Leopold Fellow at the Aldo Leopold Foundation. Dr. Meine first delivered this essay on February 26, 2010, in a speech at the Marquette University Law School for the 2010 Public Service Conference on Water and People. Kurt generously offered to re-edit and narrate this essay expressly for this series, and we would like to thank him for this, and also for playing some swell lead guitar on the song Outside's Turning In, performed by the Whoopers, which was heard on episode 2. This podcast preserves the lecture format of the original presentation. Here's Kurt Meine.
Ripples of a Water Ethic in Wisconsin. Ripples on the water. It is a fitting image with which to consider the origins and expansion of a water ethic in Wisconsin and around the world. And Marquette University is a fitting place. Père Marquette points the way for us, perhaps, from the university's official seal. We see him exploring Wisconsin's waters with his Native American guides, gesturing toward a far horizon that we might well imagine to be an ever-unfolding future. As Jacques Marquette and Louis Joliet and their guides paddled along Green Bay and up the Fox River, they passed along what would become Marquette County. They came to the vital point of Portage and into the Mississippi watershed, a key gathering point of Wisconsin's waters. 200 years later, John Muir and his family of Scottish immigrants would come to Marquette County and land along the shores of Little Fountain, now Ennis Lake, one of the thousands of lakes left behind as the last Pleistocene glacier retreated. Muir, too, would cross paths with the native Ho-Chunk people of the region. All of our forebears, native and missionary, explorer and immigrant, would carry their canoes over literal and figurative portages, making ripples in the ethical landscape of Wisconsin. All would, according to varied traditions, define the value of our inviting waters. Every March, we recapitulate the end of the Pleistocene as winter fades into spring. The ice and snow melt. Some of that meltwater evaporates and returns to the atmosphere. Some takes a side trip through Wisconsin's marshlands and prairies and forests before evaporating. Some seeps through the soils and sandstone and into the shallow aquifer, perhaps to reappear in my shower and coffee pot a bit downstream, allowing me to maintain my health, my hygiene, and my high level of caffeine intake. Some flows over the surface and settles into our ponds, lakes, wetlands, and backwater sloughs. Some provides a home to Wisconsin's myriad aquatic plants and little critters that feed the gizzard shad, chubs, and other fish that feed the wintering bald eagles that will migrate back to the north woods of Wisconsin, where they will begin to make a new generation of eagles. Some will be used by local farmers and businesses. Some will take a detour through septic fields and water treatment plants. Much of the meltwater will flow downstream into Lake Superior and Lake Michigan and on through the St. Lawrence River to the North Atlantic. Or it will empty into the Mississippi, fall hundreds of feet over 1,000 miles, flow past New Orleans and into the Gulf of Mexico, Ultimately, it will evaporate and disperse via the firmament to the world. Perhaps in some future incarnation, it will fall upon Wisconsin and begin the journey again. At every point in the great revolving hydrological cycle, people, you and I, will make decisions that determine the fate of the water and the community of life that it supports. We will choose how to use it, protect it, manage it, fish it, treat it, regulate it. We will decide how to study it, buy or sell it, value it, honor it. We will make those decisions based on varied factors and forces. Our constitution and our laws, our science, the local and global economy. But we will also make those decisions based on the traditions in our families, the standards in our communities, the respect of our neighbors, the priorities of our culture. We will make decisions according to our sense of beauty and mystery. We will make decisions on the basis of our spiritual beliefs, our values, and our ethics. And the ever-flowing water will reflect and carry the results of our choices. As we make our choices, we will not just be making them for ourselves. Whether we recognize it or not, whether we honor it or not, we will also make decisions for our families, our neighbors, and our communities, for the next generation, and for all future generations. We will make decisions for what John Muir called our fellow mortals, the creatures that share our watersheds and landscapes and flyways and ecosystems. How we make our decisions, how we accept or decline to accept our multiple responsibilities, how our legal tools and institutions help or hinder us in the work. These are the questions we are called upon to consider. In the domain of ethics, questions of scientific knowledge intersect with matters of cultural meaning and perception. Questions of conservation, sanitation, and public health meet issues of justice, equity, and human rights. Questions of sustainability and biodiversity involve the procedures of democracy and governance, policy, and law. To enter that domain is to make a continuing series of intellectual portages, to move back and forth across divides among seemingly separate fields. But it is at such points where we in fact recognize connections, see larger realities, and forge new relationships. Given an entire day or week, we could perhaps narrate the whole epic story of people and water that began at least 12,000 years ago at the end of the truly long winter in Wisconsin, the last ice age. We would tell of the melting back of the continental glaciers, the role of water in shaping the landscape, the arrival of the people and cultures newly emerging in the mid-continent. We would explain to ourselves how water has always defined life in Wisconsin. We would share the stories and histories and traditions and worldviews of Wisconsin's native communities and see how intimately they are connected to its waters. We would heed history and know the native foundations of Wisconsin's land ethic. Better even to say, perhaps, that our ethic springs from deep waters and remains a living, flowing, ethical tradition. We find that ethic rippling from John Muir's farmstead lake, where his family settled in the 1840s. Muir, too, found spiritual connection through the waters of Wisconsin. On Sundays, he wrote in my boyhood and youth, after or before chores and sermons and Bible lessons, we would drift about on the lake for hours, especially in lily time, getting the finest lessons and sermons from the waters, flowers, fishes, ducks, and the muskrats. He would carry those lessons and sermons from Wisconsin to the world. Wisconsin's water ethic has deep sources, too, in our rich scientific tradition. That tradition includes, among so many others, Increase Lapham, our first prominent scientist, who charted the weather, described the land, and warned of the consequences of deforestation. T.C. Chamberlain, who by examining our moraines and waterways figured out how the glaciers worked over the landscape of Wisconsin and North America. Charles Van Hise, president of the University of Wisconsin in the early 1900s, whose landmark textbook on conservation importantly featured water issues. And Edward Burge and Chancey Judae, whose studies of our lakes helped build a new science and made Wisconsin the global center for the study of freshwater systems. Our water ethic tradition includes preeminently Aldo Leopold. As we are meeting at a law school, it seems appropriate to read the concluding sentence of an obscure article on lakes and terrestrial ecosystems that Leopold wrote in 1941. Commenting on our penchant for modifying aquatic ecosystems, Leopold wrote, "Thus, men too wise to tolerate hasty tinkering with our political constitution, accept without a qualm the most radical amendments in our biotic constitution." It was, as Leopold noted in so many of his writings, so much easier to change the land and its waters than to change ourselves and our ethical norms. Although Leopold's sense of an ethical regard for water began long before, during his boyhood along the Mississippi River in Iowa, it progressed through pioneering work in the vulnerable watersheds of the semi-arid American Southwest. It came together in Wisconsin in a quiet place called Coon Valley in the early 1930s. This badly eroded valley in western Wisconsin, typical of so many others in the region, became the site of the nation's first watershed conservation demonstration project. Hundreds of farmers within the watershed committed themselves to stemming the degradation that their own forebears had brought on in the decades following European settlement. The result was a revolution in soil and water conservation. It would affect not only the Wisconsin landscape, but landscapes across the region, the nation, and the world. Coon Valley's adventure in cooperative conservation, as Leopold called it, would influence profoundly his understanding of conservation. As much as any episode in his storied life, it would demonstrate that conservation must embrace not only the ecological dynamics of the land, but our changing social relationships on the land. In his lectures, he often used a photograph to illustrate the point. The photographer, Leopold himself, is looking downhill along an eroding stream bed. The incipient gully is headed directly toward the farmhouse of the downstream neighbor. That image explained Leopold's land ethic, our commingled commitments to our neighbors and to the land itself, as well as anything he ever penned on the theme. Leopold's ethical insights drew upon his decades of field experience, his appreciation of emerging scientific concepts, and his frustration with short-sighted economic and resource management policies. He finally summarized his concerns in The Land Ethic, the capstone essay in his classic book, A Sand County Almanac. In it, he expressed the fundamental lesson that he had learned through his career, that to address effectively our conservation needs, to realize the full range of cultural benefits from the land, to sustain our economy and communities, and to demonstrate respect for our fellow creatures, we as individuals and communities must assume responsibility for the health of the land as a whole. It's useful to break that summary down and make a few points that connect Leopold's idea to our discussion here of water and ethics. First, Leopold's definition of land was broad and inclusive, and water was an essential component of it. In his words, the land ethic simply enlarges the boundaries of the community to include soil, waters, plants and animals, or collectively, the land. Second, Leopold saw the sphere of our ethical consideration expanding throughout history, however fitfully, and held that it must expand in the future to include the land. The extension of ethics to the land, he wrote, if I read the evidence correctly, is an evolutionary possibility and an ecological necessity. Third, such an ethic entails responsibility for the healthy functioning of the entire biotic community. In one of his most elegant statements of the theme, he wrote, "Conservation is a state of health in the land. The land consists of soil, water, plants, and animals, but health is more than a sufficiency of these components. It is a state of vigorous self-renewal in each of them and in all collectively." We might say it differently today. We would refer to the resilience of aquatic ecosystems. We can talk with much greater scientific precision about point source pollution, polluted runoff, soil erosion and sedimentation rates, species diversity, invasive species and trophic cascades, altered hydrological regimes, excessive groundwater withdrawal, extreme rainfall events, and climate change. But in the end, it is still all about the health of the land as a whole and water as a fine indicator of that health. Finally, we live in a society that regards land first and foremost not as a community, as Leopold implored, but as a commodity. He wrote in the foreword to A Sand County Almanac, "We abuse land because we regard it as a commodity belonging to us. When we see land as a community to which we belong, we may begin to use it with love and respect. Shall we treat water as a mere commodity, or shall we treat it as the essential ingredient that supports and determines the quality of life, of all life, in the larger community to which we belong? Science informs our consideration of that question, but it cannot answer it. For that, we must turn to our ethical sources and traditions. Leopold helped to prepare the way for others, well-known and scarcely remembered, who would continue to elaborate our water ethic. Gaylord Nelson and Walter Brissett, Luna Leopold and Roscoe Churchill, Art Hassler and George Becker, the Menominee Nation and the Mole Lake Band of Ojibwa, and so many others. Those who preceded us in this rippling of ideas outward call upon us now to join the discussion. We are all part of a necessary, ongoing conversation about the physical, ecological, economic, cultural, and spiritual value of water, and what we as individuals and as a community ought to do with respect to that value. In living up to that obligation, we may take some encouragement from Leopold and what I have taken to calling the most important sentence that he ever wrote. I have purposely presented the land ethic as a product of social evolution because nothing so important as an ethic is ever written. It evolves in the minds of the thinking community. It is a remarkable thing when one ponders it. In an essay entitled The Land Ethic, Leopold notes that no one can in fact write an ethic. With that sentence, Leopold wisely liberated his own idea and invited everyone to participate in its further development. It is in fact a call to responsibility, a directive to all of us to bring to this vital work our own experience, background, insight, and knowledge. Aldo Leopold did not write the land ethic. You and I are the thinking and caring community. You and I write the land ethic by entering the conversation. It evolves through our commitment, and if we believe that water must be given greater respect and attention in that process of ethical development, then let us not wait. Let us go to the water's edge and get about the task.
Water, Wisconsin, and the Mercury Cycle is a production of the University of Wisconsin Water Resources Institute, with funding provided by the United States Geological Survey. This episode was written and narrated by Kurt Miney, except for the introduction, which was narrated by Chris Bocast. That's me. This series has benefited greatly from the editorial guidance of Moira Harrington and the assistance of the entire Aquatic Sciences Center communications staff. Thanks for listening.